ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Coin Geek Weekly live stream. I am your host, Kurt Wooker Jr., and we are doing a very special show today featuring the enigmatic, the pragmatic, and ultimately probably not pneumatic Paul Rachgod, the head of venture capital over at Air Ventures or Air Group or Air something. I'm sure he'll let me know exactly what it is when we get him on the air, but I wanted to start a little bit. Oh, we got Mr. Moon saying I'm blurry. Why am I blurry? I didn't set myself to be blurry. Give me one second here. Unblur. Remove the blur. There's no more blur. All right. Sorry. Camera settings, meeting after meeting. Now I've lost my complete train of thought. Thank you, Alex Moon. The show is ruined and it's your fault. All right, everybody. First, I want to remind you to like, subscribe, share, all of that stuff. Hit the bell so every time we go live, you get notified. And you can come join the troll box. You can let all the Gregs know that we're happy no matter what happens because we're excited about the power of BSV. Of course, we want number go up, but that's not going to happen until, well, I don't know. We got a bunch of theories about stuff like that. And actually, I was talking to Paul a little bit right before the show and I'd like to hear his opinion on some of that stuff. So let's remind me if we get toward the end of the show and we haven't talked about the price suppression of BSV, shoot me a message here. So everybody, please fill the troll box with your questions, comments, blessings, cursings, scrapes, gripes, or gropes. We will be sure to cover them. We're going to talk about a whole bunch of stuff, but I want to talk a little bit about some of the news going on in the space before we pop in here. There's some very interesting stuff going on. The JPEG trading, the all the new, the show's brought to you by, who's it brought to us by? What are we doing? Oh, there we go, CryptoCraft.com. Thanks, everybody. No, for real, check out CryptoCraft.com. They are a delightful place to check out the news of the day, check out the tickers of the important stuff going on in the crypto sphere, as well as joining the forums, which there is so much value coming out of forums that I wish more people would just look into them and do those things because you can actually have valuable discussions in forums. I've seen businesses formed in forums, so you can do that. And again, thank you to CryptoCraft.com. I implore you, everybody, please check them out. So let's talk a little bit about the news and stuff going on. First of all, I'm super excited. I did actually have a call yesterday with Richard Baker, the new CEO of Tal. We're trying to reorganize the schedule right now, and I want to get Richard on the show as soon as possible because I'm very excited about the prospects of the new CEO. He has a very different attitude than the norm. He's looking to make waves. He's looking to make big changes, and I'm very excited about them. In fact, I basically couldn't have had a more encouraging call with a dude at Tal. And, you know, as someone who's very interested in the mining space and interested in BSV and infrastructure in general, I think he's got the right attitude. He's got a ton of experience. He's a world-class CEO. And I'm really excited about the stuff going on there. So bullish on Tal, which is, you know, I don't know that I was necessarily bullish on Tal before. I wasn't bearish on Tal either. But at the same time, it was just a little bit like, oh, okay, yeah, they're the big mining company and that's fine. But Richard has made me excited about the prospects of the future over there. So that's a good thing. Also, I wanted to talk a little bit about like some of the protocol stuff. I keep getting people sending me questions about why not this project? Why that project? In fact, I think the comment came up from Steven in here. Let's bring that up. Mr. Steven Ross, why don't you talk about Duro Dogs? I don't know. I like Duro Dogs. I have a Duro Dog. I'm friends with the guys from Unbounded. Jack Lasky, reach out to me, please. We'll get you on the schedule. We'll talk about Duro Dogs. It was in beta and I didn't want to flood the situation. But if you're ready to have people come on and talk about it, let's do it. We'll talk Duro Dogs. Anything in the NFT space. If you've got a project coming up, I get people all the time now, Kurt, can you retweet my thing? Can you promote my thing and do whatever? You can talk to Alex Moon about promoting your project on the live stream. So this can be like the next Gopniks drop or the, you know, breeding Slavets and Gopniks or whatever it is you're going to do, you know, dropping JPEG balls or whatever else. We can do those things, but talk to Alex Moon. If you want to sponsor the show, but do it through Alex Moon. He's the guy that makes those deals. So my two cents. Hey, Kurt, have you tried my two cents already? I have started to a couple of times. And I get in and I'm like, okay, I think I get it, but I'm not really sure what else to do with it. And this is largely because I'm very busy. And when I've got free time, I don't really feel like tinkering. I spend time with my kids and then usually pass out on the couch while like literally wrestling one of my toddlers. So I apologize. But yes, I need to spend a little bit more time on my two cents. I have logged in, I've checked it out, and I've talked to some of my colleagues who've done the same, generally like it. But we should really do some more serious feedback on that topic. But Mr. Moon, we are going to have an ad, so get that queued up. Let's do the thing, and then we're going to come back with Paul Rajkon. We're going to talk about venture capital, investment, business management, and how to be successful. Because ultimately, I want to see your businesses thrive. This includes the people that get money from Air Group, but it also includes people that get money from nowhere, and it includes people that bootstrap their own stuff. I don't care who you are. I want to see your business bring in tons of customers, create tons of transactions, and pump my bags of BSV because I'm excited about what's really only possible on BSV. So we're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about how to make your business successful. Mr. Moon, play the ad. Hello, Mr. Rajkon. How are you, my friend and colleague?
That was an amazing ad. Can we play that again? No. I'm good.
Alex, very funny. Thank you, Mr. Moon. Yeah. There you go. You got twice your money's worth. So the price is, I don't know, whatever. Paul, how are you doing, man?
I'm good. I'm exhausted. I think you and I have kids the same age, but flipped. So my daughter's 2.5 and my son is 14 months. And my daughter now wakes up. She's going through this phase where she's waking up in the middle of the night. Luckily, she doesn't cry, but she likes to sing songs. So suddenly there's ABCs and the wheels on the bus blaring in the house. So she was up 2 hours last night. So the bags under the eyes are getting, bigger and bigger and bigger, but I'm good. I'm punchy, but I'm good.
Yeah, no, it's so funny. I got the same thing. Like Ronan, he's finally starting to figure out like a little bit like alphabet and counting. So he'll count, but he never starts with one. He always starts with 2, 3, and I'm always like, Ronan, 1, and he just looks at me and goes, 2. Okay, it's fine. We'll get there. it's the same thing. I'm like, all right, I could theoretically get 9 hours of sleep tonight, and it's like 6 or whatever.
6. So, I'll die for 6.
Yeah. Well, welcome to fatherhood.
Hey, it's what a wondrous day to be talking to you and chatting with everyone here on 2/22/2022 from the Antiguan BSV Citadel to the South Florida BSV Citadel. It's amazing.
Absolutely. And we are and coming up on 2/22 in the Eastern time zone. So for everybody, let's see if the nexus of the universe collapses in on itself and see what happens there. Paul, you and I have, I think we've known each other about 2 years now. And we have talked, not a ton, we don't talk a lot, but we talk occasionally about business development and some other things. And this is one of the things that I sort of took up as my mantle, like explaining to people like, hey, maybe you should spend 2/3 of your budget on hiring a sales professional instead of hiring more software devs. And this is something that you've been an ally on from the beginning when we chat about it. So I'm curious, as someone who, you know, as far as I understand it, you're the guy that vets the incoming people as to whether or not they get an investment from Air Ventures. What does that process look like from the time somebody receives money? Are they getting coaching or management or some of the other stuff going on in there? Or like, are you an advice guy, or is Air Ventures very hands-off? I'd like to look behind the curtain a little bit and hear what that process is like.
I think that I'm an advice guy. You know, some folks in the audience might agree, might disagree, but I like to think so. But I got to say, I'm a little insulted here. I'm a little put off. I thought I've watched almost every live stream, and isn't there the give us your background? Who are you? Like, come on. Doesn't anybody want to hear my
All right, let's rewind. Paul, how did you discover Bitcoin? What is your Bitcoin story? You're right. You called me out. You're calling me out on my own show. So I'm going to remember this next time we're at a conference or something together. I'm going to get you back. But let's hear your Bitcoin. Let's hear your Bitcoin story.
Sure, I'll keep it brief. The reason I think it's a little relevant, besides that I like myself a lot, is I think it informs how I approach reviewing, you know, pitches and investor decks and management companies and sitting on the boards of these companies. Because as you might know, you might not, virtually every investment, I have my list of them here in case I forget anyone's, I've got my cheat sheets, because if I forget a name or whatever of a company, you know, in the throes of the discussions, you know, I'll be in trouble. But we're pretty much on the board or have an observer seat, like a director, but not actually having votes on things on every company. So we're very, very involved once we move forward. But my background, before joining Air Ventures, I had a 20 plus year career as an investment banker, an evil bankster, I guess. I don't know if bankster thing applies to the tech investment bankers that, you know, do the M&A and IPOs and all that stuff. That's the stuff I did. I also, in my early years, I was born in Canada. I moved to the US when I was 9. So I actually grew up in the States from 9 to 18 years old. So I speak American and Canadian culture. I speak Celsius and Fahrenheit. And like all my formative years were in, 9 to 18 years old, were in Arizona and Texas, in Tempe, Arizona and Plano, Texas. So for anyone who's seen Friday Night Lights, that was my high school experience, including my team being the Plano East Panthers. So as I say, I kind of understand, I guess you could call at least the 80s, 90s perspective on American culture and background and what have you. And then I moved back to Canada after high school and lived in Canada until we moved here to Antigua recently. But what I did as a banker was I focused on the tech sector, and tech means all kinds of things. In Canada, it also included gaming and iGaming. And though I did not work with Calvin Ayer ever, I did work with somebody who ended up being in Calvin's family office many years later, which is how I ended up getting here, which is awesome. But what I focused on was tech companies in Canada that were small cap, so high growth, early stage companies, not necessarily startups, although we would, you know, meet with those companies as well because they might become a good M&A partner for another company. But we would always work with small cap companies that wanted to grow and become a billion-dollar company and graduate to NASDAQ. As some viewers might know, there's a lot of international companies on New York Stock Exchange, NASDAQ, London. A lot of them are from Canada and elsewhere. In fact, there's hundreds of companies in the U.S. stock exchanges that are from Canada. So I'd work with those kind of companies, try to help them grow, you know, me and my investment banking competitors and colleagues and so on, try to help them grow to be a billion-dollar-plus company and then move on to NASDAQ. So I have a lot of experience working with these earlier stage companies, and I think have a pretty good feel for how do you grow a company. What kind of a team do you need to have? I've not been a tech entrepreneur myself. I have been, for what it's worth, an investment banking entrepreneur, and that is that I joined a startup investment bank fairly early in my career, and we grew it to a good size and got swallowed by one of the Canadian banks. So yeah, I've been an entrepreneur to a degree, but you know, I'm not a coder, I'm not a dev, I don't have that kind of background, but I have the background helping them figure out what they need, how they can get it. Let's go do it together, and let's, you know, take you to that much, much bigger company. Sure. So along the way, in the tech, and by the way, interrupt me at any time, otherwise I'll go on and on and on. But once blockchain became a thing and the public markets started to care about it, especially the mining space, because that's, you know, capital intensive. So this is around 2016, 2017. A lot of companies started to go public in Canada, whether they were based there or not, because Canada is very good at again, at small cap growth companies. You'll actually often have U.S. companies come to Canada, raise capital there first. And once they're big enough, if they couldn't do it through VCs and so on, then they go to NASDAQ. So we started working with blockchain companies, and I reconnected with this buddy of mine who was now working for Calvin's family office. One thing led to another, and I had this opportunity to come down and interview for the job. And I said, yes, yes, please. Sounds very exciting. Because by then, I was sort of swallowed up in BCH, you know, not to your degree or a whole lot of folks' degrees, but as a banker and as a person interested in that space, I dove fairly deep into BCH, started to understand, oh, blockchain's supposed to do something. I see. It's supposed to actually be utilized. Oh, I get it. And, you know, the white paper and Satoshi's, you know, public forum posts and so on. So I fell for all that. And then when I finally had the opportunity to come and interview, this is kind of a funny story, and then I'll shut up. I don't think everyone at the meetings that I went to were told who I was and what I was coming for. But I was told, you know, you're going to fly in, you're going to meet with a bunch of folks in the ecosystem. There's some meetings going on, and you should come in at, let's say, 2 o'clock. So I opened the door to this boardroom at 2 o'clock, and there I am looking at, you know, Steve Shatters, Dr. Wright, Calvin, all these people that I've not met yet, but by then have become very familiar with. And there's one empty seat at this giant table. And I'm like, excuse me, pardon me.
No pressure.
And I see, yeah. And like, everyone's looking at me and I'm like, oh, they probably weren't told who the hell I am and what I'm doing here. And sure enough, somebody speaks up and goes, oh yeah, that's Paul. He's interviewing for that VC thing. So pretty awkward, pretty uncomfortable. I'm like, oh, it's fine. I probably walked into some, you know, pivotal future of Bitcoin meeting that I shouldn't. I was still interviewing. I hadn't got the job yet, right? But, you know, then time goes on. I got the job, and, you know, I'm still thrilled today to work with these folks and have my sort of little seat in the ecosystem, which is awesome.
No, that's a killer story. I mean, it's funny because I've heard similar stories from people who, you know, kind of enter the boardroom, and it's like, oh, everyone's here. Like, this is, especially, you know, in certain eras, you know, it's a little bit of a different story in 2019 than it was in, say, 2016 or something. And like, oh wow, what was the plan back then? I think there's this sort of like enigmatic stigma about what it must be like to be, you know, be in a room with Calvin and Craig and Steve and Jimmy and some of the other people at the same time. And, you know, I think,
well,
it's,
I gotta
funny
say, now, like for me, it was, for me, you know, at that point, I'm still a banker at that point. So I have a job, I have a career and so on, but I was still awestruck when I walked in that room, and then we all had lunch together, and I'm like, holy shit. So yeah, it was
pretty cool. Sure. Yeah, it's funny. Cause I mean, I did the same thing. You know, I've been a Bitcoiner for a long time. So I kind of, you know, I knew who everyone was, but then, you know, the first time you shake Calvin's hand or you shake Craig's hand or this and that, and I'm always a little bit like, ooh, man, this just got pretty heavy here, you know? So it's something. Here's a good icebreaker question from Carbon Craft. How many BSV companies has Air Group invested in?
Okay. So if you go to air.group, /portfolio, or just go to air.group and you'll see portfolio. There you see all the current investments. Off the top of my head, and I'm looking at a cheat sheet from my presentation, because little spoiler alert, some of the companies we invested in, you know, didn't do what they say they would do. So further spoiler alert, they appear in that ad that you guys play all the time. And I wish I could get, if I should have mentioned this, we should probably get them to change it to the ad that we showed at the conference, which edited out the jerks that didn't do what they say they would do. So I think they want to do their homework, they can figure out who that is. But anyway, but the other little bit of insight is, this tells you a bit about how we work. It's basically me and a junior investment analyst who do all the sort of the first stage work. Then we have an investment committee, like probably most VCs or all VCs do, that we report to, who then report to Calvin. And everyone who follows, you know, BSV knows Calvin's very, very involved. He sees all. So he often comes up with ideas and sends them to us of things that he wants us to have a good look at. But the thing I wanted to add is we're not the fastest moving, because we've got this investment committee that has some really, really awesome, talented executives and money managers that manage billions of dollars of money, of funds. They like me and then some. They have years and years of experience helping companies grow, and they demand a very, very rigorous due diligence process that makes us not be the fastest moving. The reason I mention all that is there are some investments that I would have liked us to make that we didn't make, that instead friends of ours made. I don't want to mention any names of them right now, but the names you see on the website are in fact all the ones that Air Ventures had invested in. Air Ventures is a division of Air Group. So there you go. Air Group is, you know, the empire that also owns hotels and food and beverage businesses and, you know, the helicopter business and so on and so forth. And yep. Probably all kinds of things that I have no insight to because I'm not involved in it, but we're the VC arm of the family office. And so, yeah, there's some investments. There's, I'll say is this, there are some companies in the ecosystem that we are not directly investors of. Other funds were able to move more quickly because they don't have our process. They have their own process. And so there's a couple I'll say without naming the names that, for instance, I'm on the board of, or I have an observer seat on the board, even though we are not an investor. So I guess I'd say 15 to 20 companies. And don't forget, one or two of those companies have now been swallowed by other companies. We used to be an investor in yours, which was Money Button's parent company. Right. And that got sold to Fabric, so we're no longer an investor of that company. We used to be an investor in Streamanity, which got sold, as an example.
Right. Interesting. And it seems like the sort of the profile of who gets invested in has changed. And actually, I haven't really heard an announcement in quite some time about a new investment. So maybe maybe this is part of a change that's happening. But it seemed like, you know, it was every other week or something a couple of years ago, and they were all like very clearly early stage startups, sort of infrastructural, like, hey, this could be a really cool app in, you know, 3 to 5 years or something. And then it seemed like then it changed to more, you know, companies taking the next step and that kind of thing. And then it seemed like the timing on like new announcements and stuff seemed to grow at that point too. I imagine that's strategic, but maybe you can speak on that.
Well, you know, it's a number of things. It's partly strategic. We're trying to focus more and more on what I've often talked about as growth stage companies. So, for instance, we were not an investor in company with a K, although I would have loved us to be, because obviously they've, I shouldn't say obviously, because who knows, but I imagine they've done very well for their investors by getting acquired by Moody's, if I recall correctly. But there's a great company with a senior management team that have had 2 or 3 exits, and that's a theme I'm going to talk about a bit today. The CEO of that company, Russell Perry, I don't know if he's talked about this before in interviews, but if you look him up, you'll see he's built and sold a couple of companies before. I just love that. I love that. I used to love it when I was a tech investment banker, because what investor doesn't like to see an executive who's been there and done that before, even if they're failures? You know, failures are fine. If you learn from them and you build them, that's great. But how much better than a failure is a success? You built a company, you sold it, you did it again, built it, sold it, and now you've come to BSV. And you're doing certain things, not maybe not everything on BSV, but you're using certain BSV superpowers to bring that to your enterprise customers. I just love that stuff. So, I believe so does Calvin and the investment committee. So we're trying to focus more and more on growth stage companies. Some examples we have invested in are like Buzzcast, who we talked about, I know at the October conference, we just invested in them. They've got backing from some of the most recognized U.S. angel investors. Jason Calacanis and his group invested, you know, before us. And they've built and sold companies before and are now doing their next thing on BSV using, I guess you could call it corporate gamification type NFTs with their, software platform for companies. So we're trying to do that more and more because we think we can add value there. But having said that, per the ad we just played and that we always play, we still love startups. We sponsor the hackathons. But as I say, we like to invest in startups and we continue to, and some of our recent announcements that we saw in the fall, and I'll get to the next part of your question in a second, they're still startups. We still love startups if they have, great technology, but also a great team, ideally one that's been there and done that before, again, something we'll talk about a fair bit today. You know, we love to invest in those kind of companies. And so we do have two investments we closed recently. There's always delays in closings. Anyone who's listening and who's seen us before, either in their prior lives or in their own, you know, BSV focused startup or whatever, it never goes quite as quickly as you think it's going to. There's often delays on our end. There's delays on the company's end. There's delays with your lawyers. There's delays with our lawyers. There's always going to be delays. It's just the way it works. So we had some delays. There was one that I was hoping was going to be announced either today, coincidentally, or yesterday, and it didn't. So it's getting announced tomorrow. Sure. And it's an awesome company that is part, I won't give it away. It's kind of funny, like I'm so used to as an investment banker dealing with public companies, you can't talk about stuff until the press release comes out because of a little thing called insider trading and the law.
Yep.
With these companies we're investing in, they're not public companies. Nobody can go and scoop, you know, some Buzzcast shares ahead of the market hearing a news announcement or whatever, but it's just, what I'm used to. So I don't want to give away any info, even though you're going to see the news tomorrow. But yeah, we're investing in a couple enterprise focused things that one is earlier than the other, but delivering really, really well. And the other one has incredibly talented, experienced management who've been there and done that a number of times before. And we think they're going to be amazing in the ecosystem.
Nice. Well, this is an interesting thing. You know, people talk about, you know, why won't Calvin pump my bags? Why isn't BSV going up and all of this nonsense? And like, I understand that. Like, I could have bought Ethereum 2 years ago at $100 and made a lot of money and done nothing. So yeah. I get the sentiment, but at the same time, like, I feel like we're the only blockchain community or economy or whatever looking at the businesses and saying, like, you know what, maybe it doesn't matter if the coin is $85 forever, as long as you can build a company that can make a successful exit, for example, and say, like, yeah, we took, you know, three rounds of investment equaled, you know, maybe $200,000 or something, got everything all bootstrapped. Mm-hmm. And then we sold for, you know, $80 million 5 years later to, you know, we got bought by some other company in a major acquisition. And, you know, like, these are the kind of things that people aren't really thinking about in the crypto economy, but they are actual, you know, real business goals to build a company that has cash flow, has profit, is able to do these things because of the underlying technology. So I'm curious about your position on, like, the value of BSV. Is that something that gets discussed in circles there? Like, how do we make BSV more valuable? Or are you very strictly focused on, like, the portfolios of the company, like the company's performance as the cornerstone of the portfolio?
I'm 100% focused on the companies. I'm not involved in any discussions about the price. I have opinions on the price and you know, my own two cents from my background and stuff. You know, if I can delve into that for a second, you know, this is what I tell friends and colleagues of mine that still work in the capital markets, and everyone follows crypto now and is like, hey, what the hell's with that BSV price? What's going on? And I say, look, BSV is like, I said this to, let's talk about Medium for a second, just as a quick example. When Medium has some people in common, just coincidentally with a bunch of people I used to work with years ago that were the equity sales and trading partners of mine when I was an investment banker at one particular boutique firm a number of years ago. Now they all happen to be in this little fund that was looking at Medium. So I was like, hey, they used to call me Raji. Raji is my old nickname from investment banking days. So nice. I'm off. I think my hand cash handle is Raji, and it is on a few other things. Anyway, that's where it comes from. But they're like, hey, Raji, what's going on with this? And I said, look, this is just like all those deals we used to do. You know, Shopify is the big dog with the big high multiple, or Salesforce.com is, or Netflix is, and we're taking the next streaming company public that's small today. It doesn't have that multiple yet, but it's growing, it's delivering, it's actually doing what it's supposed to frickin' do. You know, in the case of Shopify, Netflix, this is where my example breaks down, because those companies, of course, are doing very, very well. They're doing what they're supposed to do.
Yep.
In our world, the big dogs with the big market caps mostly are not, in my humble opinion, that maybe you share the view of. But BSV is like that growth company actually delivering results that you can see every 10 minutes, give or take. You can go and see it on bitinfo.charts, as you know, and see, well, let's see what this public company, it's not a company, but bear with me for a second. I can go see what that company delivered yesterday. Right. Oh, look at that. 3 million transactions. Right. That's a great company. So I don't have a good handle like maybe you do. And I know some other people in the ecosystem talk about the prices being suppressed by, you know, naked shorting and so on. That may very well be the case. I have no insight into that stuff. I just firmly believe right now, and it's been going on for a long, long time, which is unfortunate, but right now we're the only one delivering, literally the only one delivering, as far as I can tell, millions of freaking transactions all day long. And I just wonder, I don't know the answer to this question. It's speculative. It's theoretical. What do you think will happen when BSV is doing consistently 5 million, 7 million, 10 million, 20 million transactions a day, which I don't think is a year away. I think that's months away. Then what? Yeah. I don't know. Is the price still held down like this? Maybe, but how long can that go on? I don't know. I don't get it. Yeah. I can't envision how that can go on when we're doing 20 million, 30 million transactions a day, better than any blockchain you can think of, including their bullshit proof of stake, voting, whatever that goes into their transactions. None of them are doing 30 million transactions a day, are they? Or 50? What are they going to do in BSV is? From CryptoFight, from Haste, from Handcash, from Mint Blue, from Uniswap, from Enchain customers, what are they going to do? I don't know.
Yep.
I don't have an answer, but I'm like,
well, that's the curiosity. You know, I've predicted this for a long time that, you know, it's, I think that it will come from mining profitability. If the average block size is 10 gigabytes and we're earning something to the tune of, you know, 5 coins per gigabyte of data, then a 10 gigabyte block is 50 coins in a block. So that you're making somewhere around 10 times as much money in fees as you are in block reward, which means that if the price of BSV is $88, it might as well be $880 and people don't even see it until you do see it. And then you realize, oh, wait, if I just spin up a BSV node and stop mining, you know, Bitcoin Cash or whatever else, mm-hmm. I could be mining as if that coin is $880 right now. And, you know, the short answer is yes. And then all of a sudden, like when hash starts leaving BTC and BCH and then their block time starts slowing down and stuff, then all of a sudden, I think that starts to really mess with people's minds. But I've also predicted throughout this whole bull run, I've predicted that BSV will outperform the bears because there's so much capital right now that's been tied up in the naked shorting. And wouldn't you know it, over the last couple of weeks, the Bitfinex shorts closing, they're closing as we're entering this bear market. And the reason is because I think the cheap money, the essentially free money that people have been making and using to pay open interest is dried up. If all of a sudden your bag is getting smaller, then it's like, okay, it was a luxury for me to suppress the price of BSV. Now I got to start to, you know, patch the holes in my ship a little bit here. And, you know, one of the first things to do is close your open BSV shorts. And we're seeing that. The Bitfinex, we've had a couple of one-day drops that have been the biggest drops we've ever seen on the BSV USD pair. And so I think it's crystal clear that that's what's going on, which means to me that there'll be at some point BSV will start to trickle up while everything else is trickling down. And then there you have it.
Yeah. Well, you know, the only part that I can play, I think, is just to keep focusing on these companies. And that's mm-hmm. why, back to an earlier point, that's why we try to focus more on high growth companies that already have, you know, 50 employees, millions of dollars in sales, because we feel like in theory, and, you know, of course, the Crypto Fights examples and many others fly in the face of what I'm about to say. But we feel like the bigger high growth companies that can go attract tons of enterprises can bring a ton of transactions to the daily activity on top of all the stuff we see
sure.
from gaming and NFTs. By the way, have you heard about NFTs? I think they're going to be huge.
I think it's nothing. Probably nothing.
Write this down. It stands for non-fungible token. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
It's a thing. All right.
Those are three words that grandma definitely doesn't know. So I think, you know, and that's curious too. It's funny because guys, you know, even guys internally, guys like Joshua Hensley, like guys that I work with inside at CoinGeek and stuff, he's always said that stuff like gaming and NFTs will end up being the early, and that enterprise is always going to be like, it's going to be the thing that's never going to happen until all of a sudden it does. And I think that that's what's funny about it is there's going to be NFTs and games and that, because that stuff's easy to bootstrap. You can give it to your nephew and then all of a sudden he's got 50 friends playing the game too, you know? But then...
Yeah, and I think the thing about it, and I totally agree with that, and I understand where the whole Zoom thing came from. We all had fun with that last year. Some are still having fun with it, at least within crypto Twitter and all that. But I think people need to understand that the bigger the company is, the longer it takes for them to go live on a BSV thing, whatever that thing is. And it's just because they're a big company. They've already got lots of clients, and anyone who's a dev and works in IT and understands the whole, you know, their swim lanes and what do they call it these days? I forget the term I'm looking for. Anyway, they've already got so many things in their pipeline to work on. You can't imagine that along comes, hey, let's move to BSV, and that's going to jump ahead of all the things they're doing for their customers. So there is a longer cycle for sure. But I also think a company like Mint Blue, you know, would respectfully disagree. And although they're not doing a million transactions a day, anybody can go look up how many transactions they've done. Go see for yourselves on bsvdata.com. And I think you'll see, I don't know, it looks like closing in on a million transactions with one division of one giant European company that, if it was a US company, would be in the Fortune, I don't know, Fortune 300 or something. So they went and got an enterprise client that kind of looks like, yeah, no big deal. You know, and now they're together with that company, the parent's called Visma. They're together with the division of Visma, Yuki. They're going, as I understand it from the videos they posted online, they're going and pitching to the other divisions of this what is it? I think it's a 12,000 employee company with billions in revenue. That's a pretty freaking big enterprise client. So yeah, listen, they're not going to give crypto fights a run for their money anytime soon, but you know, they've done almost 1 million transactions on chain, give or take. That's pretty damn good for one division of one company. And I'd also ask people to consider this. Imagine an NFT platform that's on another chain that wants to come to BSV. And let's say they're a growth size company in their own right. They're like, I don't know, 10, 20 employees. They've, you know, they've got a lot of interesting investors and users of their platform. They want to come to BSV, not just, this is hypothetical. I have no idea if there's a company like this coming or if we're going to invest in one. Who knows? But let's say they're going to come to BSV, not just to issue NFTs on BSV. What if they want to use BSV's rails that hold data management, authenticity, data integrity capability that only BSV has? They're going to use BSV like their own internal platform to track NFTs they've issued on other chains.
Yep.
That to me is an enterprise client. It's not Microsoft or Starbucks, but that's an enterprise.
You know what? It's funny. I've said the same thing. I think I said it with Brenton last week about like tokenizing other blockchains data.
Yes.
Like same thing with Lightning Network. Like Lightning Network has a data integrity problem. So what if Lightning Network state data was hashed to the chain on regular intervals and they were paying us to do it? Like all of a sudden Lightning Network is an enterprise client of a BSV company. So.
It is but to dream. That would be fantastic on a couple levels.
So here's a question from Brandon Ward asking, what does the landscape look like for BSV as far as new companies coming about? That is to say, like, are there companies that we haven't heard about yet, new startups or whatever that are coming, growing, that you're excited about?
Yeah, I mean, let me say this, like in a typical week, I probably see dozens of pitches come our way from social media, from webs, from you know, CoinGeek and the Air Group websites, but even from LinkedIn. I don't mind sharing this bit of insight. I think it's okay to say this. So Xumo, which is not a company that we invested in, but Xumo came to us through LinkedIn. Xumo literally wrote to another. I think there was a connection with Calvin, you know, many moons ago somewhere. I think not a very strong connection, but they wrote to us on LinkedIn, and I look at all that stuff. I want to look at everything, and you know, as you would expect, 99% of it is, you know, I'll politely say something we don't want to invest in because usually like, hey, we're doing this thing on Ethereum, you know, but okay, great, terrific. But, you know, there are companies that we're looking at all the time that are at some stage of due diligence. I'll also say that, look, you know, we partner with, you know, the investment landscape in BSV, as a lot of people know, is co-opetition. You know, we compete with Unbounded Capital, we compete with Two Hop, we compete with some of the other investors that are, you know, quietly in the ecosystem that sometimes have their name out there and sometimes don't. But we also often partner. So, you know, some of those folks are much better, I think, at finding early stage companies that haven't reached out to us for whatever reason. And usually they can move faster, I think. So look, there's probably all kinds of companies. There's quite a few I'm aware of that are kind of percolating in our pipeline. And there's a few that I haven't had a chance to look at yet because of our pipeline. But I'm aware of quite a few. But I imagine if the overall question is the landscape, there's a ton. I mean, I can't keep up anymore.
Yeah, no, for sure. Here's an interesting question. What exactly would you need to do or what process does get you recognized and into funding rounds? And I'll add my own kicker to that. What are you looking to do once you've acquired, you know, some bit of equity in a company? Are you looking specifically to like raise valuations as funding rounds go forward? Or like, what is your thesis when you invest in something? So what are you looking for to invest? And then what's that roadmap really look like, you know, 2-3 years down the road?
Sure. It's still pretty sweeping what we're looking to invest in. You know, the way we generally look at the world is we kind of look at, industries, sectors on the planet and say, you know, we've got one or two in this one, we've got one or two in this one, we've got one or two in this one. We've kind of seeded enough. We don't need to do that anymore. That's what we've generally tried to say. Let's move on to bigger companies that can have more of an impact on the ecosystem when they come, because they'll also partner with so many of these other companies. Like, you know, when, I don't know, when a Transmira came along and we invested in Transmira, you know, they partnered with Fabric for part of their business and they partnered with some other companies in the ecosystem to do things. So it kind of benefits a whole bunch of companies. But you know, we're looking for companies that can scale. I think that's key, probably to all VCs. And, you know, It has some similarity in meaning to me, the way people talk about BSV scalability, but mostly it doesn't. Mostly we're talking about businesses that don't require, because they have like a software as a service or a Bitcoin as a service model, some kind of recurring revenue component that every sale doesn't require a door-to-door visit, a consulting visit, a sales visit. Those are important, and we'll talk about those later if we have the chance. But we like businesses that scale. Every VC does. We want to see your customers able to use your project, your platform, whatever it is, over and over again, and you get to charge X number of Satoshis or nickels or whatever the case may be, and you have a scaling business. So we like businesses at scale. We like businesses in all kinds of sectors. You know, look, we're fond of gaming. We're fond of enterprise. But enterprise, as I said, means anything. Enterprise means what Unisat does. Enterprise means what Enchain does. Enterprise means what Mount Blue. How can I screw up their name again when they had a video of all of us screwing up their name at the conference? We're not an investor in Mint Blue, by the way. But companies like that, that can work with enterprises to use BSV for something, for that, you know, data integrity layer, we love that stuff. But we'll look at anything. We'll look at anything. I love ESG businesses too. I really love that, you know, that's an angle that frankly I hadn't thought of a whole lot before last year, and probably other people were. But when that came out from, you know, Brian Daugherty and team and others in the ecosystem, and, you know, we all see Coin Carbon Cap and things like that. And the audit work of MNP in Canada, you know, the auditing firm that proves basically BSV is the most eco-friendly blockchain. That matters more and more to enterprises, matters to consumers. So we love anything that can take advantage of BSV's unique capabilities, including NFTs. We're looking at all kinds of stuff. And we're happy to look at anything, give it a fine-tooth comb, go over. But I think, I don't know if what we do in this next point is different than other VCs, but we do demand, as I said earlier, we do demand a pretty rigorous level of due diligence. And that includes, we want companies to go out and not only show us a pitch deck, but build a forecast. And a lot of people say, well, I don't know. I have an idea. I don't know what I'm going to charge my customers. And I say, hey, to quote Dr. Wright, I won't do the I won't do an Aussie accent, but I'm going to put on Dr. Wright's hat for a second. Sorry, but you're the one that wants to be an entrepreneur, not me. And you're the one that says you want to go conquer the world and make a lot of money. And, you know, is it a project or is it a business? Because if it's a business, I need to see a forecast. Now, no one's going to hold you to the forecast. Even Amazon can't forecast what's going to happen next quarter properly. So how can you as your startup? Right. But we want to see how you're thinking. We want to see, well, you know, we've talked to a handful of customers. We think we can charge X. Like if you're not doing that, then you're, all due respect, you're probably a very, very strong dev, but you're probably not, you know, CEO material. And I'm making a sweeping statement there. But as I say, look, we'll talk to anyone. We'll give everything a pretty good go over. But we need to see a really deep level of analysis that you've done, your own due diligence on your market, your customer. How are you going to grow this thing?
Well, and as far as growth is concerned, I've been, it's funny, our last show of the year, I had Connor Murray on, and I figured it'd be a little bit of a hee-haw episode. And I just got kind of fired up with a conversation before, right before we went on, and was like, dude, who's your salesman? Like, why are you not spending more money on, like, you know, get a guy who spent a career in a relevant industry that you're trying to disrupt. So he knows some of the guys who've made fortunes in that industry. And why aren't you paying him $100,000 a year plus commission to get you in front of decision makers and walk out with $1 billion in business over the next couple of years? You know, and Connor's like, oh, you know, I guess it's going to be one of those kind of interviews a little bit. Hey, and, you know, and I didn't mean to stick it to him, but it's crucial that to be doing some of that, you know, in this space to let people know, like, hey, we can disrupt. And then, you know, you can get on cruise control once you're the, you know, one of the top three names in the industry. But for now, I think we need hard, like cold callers and deal makers.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I definitely agree with that. That is something that I know you've been talking a lot about lately. And I've been like, yes, watching the live stream. I'm like, yes, absolutely. I think there's two things. I think there's two ways to accelerate growth. Maybe there's a lot more than two, but the two that occurred to me to accelerate growth for these kinds of companies. And then I want to come back to Baltazar's comment question before it goes away. But we also got to put up Connor's question. You shouldn't slam our friend Connor. Connor asked a very important question early in the live stream. Did anybody catch it? Come on, Alex, you should put it up. It was a very, very important question that I think everyone should have a look at and ponder. But meanwhile, while Alex is of course doing that request for me. So I think two ways to accelerate growth for a company in BSV. The first is to have executives who have been there and done that before, like the guys at Company, like the guys at Satoshi Blockchain Dojo, like the guys at Buzzcast and others that I'm probably not thinking of, who have built and sold a company before And now they've come to BSV to do this. So there, you've got an executive team that already knows how to do that and made, I don't know, $10 million, $20 million, $50 million, $100 million from prior exits. That's amazing. Right. The second way to do it is the way you described it. When the time comes, hire a gray-haired, talented biz dev, sales executive in supply chain, if that's your industry, or you know, if you're in Brightview's industry, you know, somebody that understands how to sell to that kind of marketplace, to those kinds of potential customers. And by the way, I think part of the issue is, and Connor's an exception, I think part of the issue is, at least in my opinion, part of the issue is a lot of the executives that you and I know in the space think they can do that. They think, I am the kind of CEO who came up with the idea, wrote the code, checked it, went through alpha and beta, now it's launched, and right. I am the guy who can also then become Steve Jobs or Tim Cook or Reed Hastings from Netflix. I can pivot and become the manager of the culture and run a big company. And I'm like, usually you can't. No offense. Usually you can't. That's fine. That's fine for now. But there's a time for a lot of the companies, even the ones that we invested in, a lot of them, this is, they're the exception to this, but I think a lot of them will reach a point where they're better positioned to become the CTO and bring in either a seasoned CEO who's got a salesy focus or bring in a sales manager. I think the challenge with what you've suggested many times is capital, because it's usually, in my experience, they want more than 100 grand. They probably want 250 grand and a whack of equity. So that hurts. A lot of these companies don't have that kind of funding yet, but when they get it, they need to do that. And the one thing I want to say about Connor, besides that important question he asked about the cuteness of dogs, is I think Connor is the kind of guy who could potentially pivot into that role, because I think he understands how to build a business. I know some things. I were an investor in Brightview, and I'm on the board of Brightview. So there you go. It's one of those examples where I got to be careful what I say, but I think he is the kind of guy who could. Obviously, by the way, I have to say, I forgot to mention before, back when I was learning about BCH and then BSV, I watched videos by you, Ryan Charles, Connor, and others, and I learned a lot from you guys. So thank you. And how cool is it to then work with you guys and invest in Connor's company and work with Ryan Charles from time to time on other stuff. But I think Connor is a guy who could maybe pivot and become that kind of CEO.
Actually, I would argue that he probably has the right stuff to make that happen too. Like, he's A, technical, and B, you know, personable, good at explaining things. He's comfortable in you know, social situations. But you know, I can't tell you how many businesses I know who it's like, well, yeah, my business card says founder, but I don't actually do anything here. Like, you know, they had a really good idea. They got it up to, you know, maybe the first couple of million bucks, but then ultimately it was like, okay, we have a board, we have a real CEO, and we have all these things, and I get to walk around and sort of consult each of the departments, but I'm, you know, I have my equity, but I'm smart enough to let somebody else drive the train, you know? So that's almost every business that I know of. And then you get the exceptions that are your Elon Musks or your Richard Bransons or your Steve Jobs types that are just like, I will manage everything and it's going to be great. So it's pretty rare that that goes well. So
it is pretty rare. So can I address Baltazar's question?
Please.
Do you want to read it out, or how does that work?
Yeah, let's. Any advice on pitching? What advice would you give to new startup founders?
Okay, well, I think related to this is the age-old question that I know is sometimes hotly debated in BSV land, and that is, do VCs matter? What do VCs bring to the table? And then I want to dovetail into that pitch question. How do you pitch? I think good VCs, and I don't mean me, I mean our firm, because again, you have me, you have our team, you have our investment committee that has, you know, depth of experience beyond what I have. And of course, we have Calvin, who weighs in on these things all the time and has great ideas all the time that he emails me about, and let the cat out of the bag, he emails Kurt about sometimes. Sometimes we're in the same email here and there, and Alex too. So spoiler alert, Kurt gets emails also from Calvin. Anyway, so I think VCs provide much more than capital. Here's my pitch on why VCs. Going back to my background, look, I have 20 plus years of seeing all kinds of companies, clients of mine succeed, clients of mine fail. I'm not going to tell you that I'm give perfect advice, but I have a pretty good feel for what it takes to grow these companies, right? So a lot of people seek out VCs because we're good sounding boards. We often have experience from those prior business careers, and we can help with ideas to accelerate growth. So here I have a good example of the value add that a VC can bring. And this is purely hypothetical. This is not, I'm not pointing a finger at any particular company anyone, you know, may think of, but imagine that a startup was pitching to VCs and said, hey, I have a super unique growth idea, growth strategy no one's come up with. We want to make actual racist, misogynist, homophobic, and anti-Semitic jokes on social media. What do you guys think? Will you invest in my company? And I'd be like, say what now? And then what if they said, no, that's not all. We also want to take over users' accounts from time to time, maybe change their profile pics if they piss us off, maybe shut down their account and take funds that were in their wallet if they criticize our customer support. What do you think? What do you think of that idea? I think if I got pitched by a company that wanted to do that, or probably any VC, I think they'd say, no, I really think I'm going out on a limb here, maybe. But I think trying to alienate huge swaths of the population of planet Earth with offensive jokes is probably not a good growth strategy. And I got to say, I haven't done full due diligence on this. I could be wrong about this next statement, but I think Tim Cook, Jeff Bezos, Reed Hastings of Netflix, and the CEO of dating app Bumble, if anyone knows who that is, I often get her name wrong, so I had to write it down. Whitney Wolf Heard, the youngest ever self-made billionaire who took her company public. I got to think they didn't use this unique marketing strategy of racist, offensive, homophobic jokes. I could be wrong. You know, maybe they do occasionally tweet, hey, check out this hilarious anti-Semitic picture I found. But I don't think they do. So first two hot tips of the day. Try to avoid breaking your own terms and conditions and, you know, closing down users' accounts if they criticize you. And probably avoid offensive tweets and jokes. Not a good growth strategy. But this gets to Baltazar's point, I think. That also illustrates the point that not everyone is cut out for VCs. And if you, you don't need VC capital, fantastic, because you're going to get helpful advice like that. But the thing to keep in mind is even tech executives who have built and sold companies and become very, very wealthy, maybe even billionaires, like our friends the Winklevi, even they have gone out and raised VC capital. Why? Sure. They don't need VC capital. So why do they do it? It's to spread risk. Get that sparring partner, get that advice from other people to make sure that you just do sort of a sanity check on your strategy. So VCs can help with all kinds of things like that. So pitch deck advice, I'll keep this part short. Think about a lot more than just the tech. The tech matters, but so does. This is the homework I've done on what I think my target market is. I've spoken to some small companies that would take my call. This is what they think they'd want to see. This is what I think the market will bear in terms of revenue, because we got to see revenue. We have to see, you know, typically there's occasionally exceptions with, like, you know, freemium models, if you want to put it that way, with you know, examples like Fscript and others that maybe have an open source or a free basic version and then charge more for higher versions. But generally, if we're talking about like a Bitcoin as a service model or a software as a service model of some sort, we want to see how you think your customers will bear the cost you want to charge them. And how did you test that?
So here's a quick follow-up, and I think I know the answer. You can basically just make a post here or make a submission on any of the websites that the group owns. But what is the process to pitch a startup to the Air Group?
Yeah, so you can reach out to me on Twitter. I think my Twitter handle was on there before. You can also reach out to us on coingeek.com, air.group. There's some spots where you can fill in your details. As I say, we pretty much look at everything except the joke ones that are trying to take a piss, as Alex might say. We get occasional funny ones that, like, you know, email us back at bsvisapieceofshit.whatever. I'm like, probably not going to follow up with that one. I think that one might be a hoax.
Yep. So we're rounding this out at about 6 minutes left. Was there anything that you really wanted to make sure that you cover while you're on the air here before I, you know, steer us one direction or another?
I'm going to say no, because otherwise I'll ramble and ramble and ramble. I think I hit most of the points, but you take us in whatever direction you want.
Sounds good. Alex, let's get rid of the questions unless you got a real juicy one here. I think I keep trying to solve these questions or these problems theoretically in my head, you know, because I get a lot of people that ask me, you know, Kurt, what's the solution to this and that? And, you know, I've been, you know, something of a successful entrepreneur in my career as well. Mm-hmm. And I look at it and I say, you know, maybe you're not an entrepreneur. Like, you might have a good idea. And I tell this to a lot of the developers in the space that really genuinely have good ideas. I tell them, like, look, you know, maybe you got young kids, maybe you got some other, maybe, you know, maybe you've got debts you need to pay off first and some other things. But I think a lot of people really, really don't have what it takes to be an entrepreneur. because truly it looks like 60 to 80 hour weeks for sometimes years at a time. And, you know, maybe giving your pitch to 20 VCs before number 21 gives you the money you need to take the step up. And a lot of this is very, you know, it's hard and it sounds sexy and it's great when Will Smith plays you in a movie in 20 years, but ultimately, you know, you have to actually be the guy that lives on the subway train for a season in your life sometimes. Yep. And I think, you know, how do we actually scrape away the junk and really get to the things that like the economy is actually begging for? And I mean this in both the like the Bitcoin sense and in just a business sense. But I think Bitcoin, you know, we're 13 years into this experiment, and there's been a criticism for most of the time is that Bitcoin is a solution looking for a problem. And how do we really give the economy something that maybe it doesn't know that it needs? Do you have your own theory about like the untapped real value of Bitcoin that maybe you wish somebody would make? Or do you even yourself have a business that like, if you were 20 years younger and maybe in a different situation, not working as a VC, would you be looking to pitch something, you know, some huge groundbreaking idea? I guess it's a little bit of a rambling question, but what do you think? What is the untapped juice that we should be squeezing for?
Well, you know, and then I saw a question pop up earlier. I forget from who that was kind of similar that asked, where do I see the growth coming from? Is it enterprise? Is it, you know, consumers, whatever? I think, let me answer that one first because I think dovetails into your question a bit. I think it's going to continue to be driven by gaming stuff, crypto fights, haste, built by gamers. I don't know exactly when what built by gamers is working on comes out. We're not an investor, don't know the story super, super well. I know the guys a little bit, but I think it's going to continue to be driven by gaming, especially, you know, play to earn. It's super hot. It's, you know, obviously it's hot all over the planet, every country, I shouldn't say every country, but you know what I mean? It's every continent probably you can imagine, except maybe Greenland. You know, there's play to earn activity going, maybe Greenland too. I have no idea. Yeah. So I think that's going to continue to be a driver for all the reasons that we suspect, but I really think enterprise is coming too. Yeah, I know it's going to drag, blah, blah, blah. People can poo-poo what I say, no problem. But that's where we see a lot of potential growth, not just gaming and enterprise. Enterprise means everything. What does enterprise mean? NFTs, gaming, software, you know, you name it. It means everything. But we're going to continue ourselves to try to go after the big fish while also keeping an eye on the early stage startups. I love what the Dojo guys are doing. I think that's really cool. You know, we had a couple of years ago, we at Air Group and some others had some early discussions about, you know, forming our own kind of incubator accelerator, and we decided it wasn't the right time and who's going to run it. And I was kind of shelved for a while. And when this came along, I'm like, that's awesome. Like, once we did our homework on those guys, we were pretty impressed with their backgrounds. And I like that they're going to help grow that next, they call them cohorts, whatever, next echelons of startups that have the benefit of understanding how can I help. What markets can I target? All that kinds of stuff. I myself don't have, you know, a startup idea, but what I get excited about every day is when a company comes our way that, you know, we're either pitching or they're pitching us. And I'm like, oh, that's going to be awesome. And I can see how they can work with this company, with that company. And, right. You know, they have hundreds of millions of users on their XYZ platform. And if they, you know, if they come to BSV, it could be incredible. So I'm still excited about that.
No, absolutely. I think the other thing that has always, you know, been in my mind is the history of Linux. Like Linux is just a piece of technology, and the people that invented it specifically to be used in like commercial server application. The problem is they didn't have a business model to get it there, and they knew that they had the right thing, but they also wanted and for many reasons needed it to be open source, and therefore there wasn't an innate incentive to go, you know, be a salesman for the thing and whatever. So some guys came together and they created a company called Red Hat and basically said, we're going to be the onboarding and customer service. And you know, we're going to be the company that Linux needs if Linux was a company. And you know, I keep telling people like there's a big opportunity to be that in the BSV space. Like you become a transaction broker or something like that. Mm-hmm. Where you help companies that have a data integrity problem, for example, and you're the one that will take on the responsibility to properly integrate and be their customer service wing. until you're the middleman serving billions of transactions for profit, plus, you know, whatever maintenance agreements and whatever that you have. And I don't see anybody doing it. I've been telling, it's like, I don't want to build it myself. I've got enough on my plate. but yeah, how do we encourage more people towards stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, that goes back to me, we're talking about enterprise customers, right? I think that goes back to, look, it's a long sales cycle. Often they're on other chains or they're not yet looking at blockchain. But again, we've seen Mint Blue breakthrough with their customer, and that's just the beginning. That's what Enchain does with their Kenzai platform and other things. So I think we're about to see that turn the corner. I really believe that. I think it's going to continue to grow. We're going to see more companies building their Bitcoin as a service platform. Vionex, you know, kind of has one. That feels to me like Vionex is still very focused on helping BSV enterprises, but that's what they are. You know, they're Vionex to me is a B2B platform helping other companies face their customers. So I guess it's part of it is B2B2C, you might say. But there are others in the space that are going to be doing that. And then, you know, lest I forget, my friends at Blaircast, who I know have been very coy about what they're doing so far. But I think Blaircast is really going to turn some things on their heads and could also see a ton of activity when the time comes and when they're able to talk about it, people will understand that. But I think it's one of these things where, to me, I can't remember the specifics, but to me, you know, X happened in 2020 that made 2020 an amazing growth year for BSV. And then Y happened in 2021 that made it a further amazing, you know, year in BSV, not because of the price and blah, blah, blah. And maybe, you know, yeah, because of transactions, but other things. The number of startups that we see that are currently small, but just keep getting added to the platform, to the BSV ecosystem that are building with all kinds of folks. We see them on Twitter. I know you've had some on your show. We're in talks with some, no doubt, you know, Two Hop and Unbounded and the other investors are in talks with some as well. There's just a ton going on that makes me feel 2020 is going to be the sort of the next leg up. I don't know what that looks like. I don't frankly care. I'm not talking about price. I'm not talking about exact number of transactions because I don't know, and how could I? But I think we are going to see 5-10 million daily transactions in the really not too distant future from all kinds of stuff. And then we'll see what happens. Then we're going to look at that and go, that's boring. Just like we do it, you know, now with 4 gigabyte block. People are like, I didn't even see that one. Who cares?
Yeah, we don't report them anymore. Meh. Yeah. Here's a good basic question. Is BSV only for entrepreneurs? I would say no right out the gate. I think it's right now mostly for gamers and people playing around on social media. But what do you think? Maybe a one sentence answer.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I mean, I think a lot of them need the help of those kind of platforms we were just talking about, depending on who you are. I mean, look, if you're a Bitcoin dev, you know, some of the folks that we've been talking about, you know, on this show and some that we haven't that understand, you know, BSV just circles and circles and circles around me, you know, they don't need that kind of help. But other companies and businesses that want to come to BSV, yeah, they need help. And they get that help and they're talking to platforms. And I know that wasn't a one sentence question, but I did my best.
That's all right. So let's talk briefly. So we're about 3 minutes over and I appreciate you going a little long. What are your thoughts on the sort of market manipulation? I know you've got this experience as an investment banker and in some of these spaces. What do you think? Do you think there's an actual price suppression campaign? Is it coming from certain people? Is it just a sentiment that drives disconnected people to oppress the price? Or do you think it's all nonsense? Is it just a conspiracy theory?
I don't know, because the trade, like in my prior life, the trading side was not what I'd experienced in. I, you know, give you a bit of insight when you may know this, but maybe not all of the viewers do. But when you do an IPO for a company, I was the one that had the relationship with the CEO and the CFO, the management team. And I, you know, pitched against fellow investment bankers at other firms and competed for the business. But that was my job. My job wasn't selling to the buyers, which are the hedge funds, the mutual funds, you know, Fidelity, Capri, you know, those kinds of institutional investors. I didn't have relationships with them. You always have a sales desk, the institutional sales desk. They're the ones that sell the IPOs, that sell the follow-on offerings, that sell a $500 million IPO for something, not the banker itself. But I have a good relationship. And of course, we have the Chinese wall, as they call it, you know, between us, so that they don't know the stuff that I see and I don't know the stuff that they see until they can tell us and vice versa. But I would talk to them frequently and get an insight. Hey, what's going on to this stock? You know, we took a company public at $15 and now it's trading at 12. What's going on? What's the scuttlebutt? And they'd say in some examples, oh, a hedge fund so-and-so has been shitting all over that stock, and they've been, you know, tweeting stuff and talking to their, newsletter that management's overpaid, and they're going to, you know, the auditors aren't, just basically making up lies. And then there you go, the shorts pile in and drive the stock down. And, you know, in some cases you can try and sue, but usually it's one of those things. It's just part of the litigious nature of the capital markets, especially in the US. You're not really going to get anywhere, even though you may be able to prove, you know, 6-7 years later in court that they made up the lies that drove your stock price down. But whatever, all you can do, all the companies can do, is try to ignore it and deliver. Because when you deliver those results, the stock should turn around. And that's kind of what I was saying earlier about BSV's, you know, price and proving it in the public markets of, you know, block explorers. And you can see all day long, we are the best performing company in the space. And so I kind of just view it organically like I used to. And I basically look at it and say, are we being shorted, you know, the way you were describing? And I know other folks like Jack Pitts talks about. I'm sure you guys are right, because that's maybe an area of expertise you have that I don't. I just go back, I think back on what I used to do, and I look back at my client, which in this case is not Air Group, not Calvin Air, but I think of my client as BSV and the companies that are doing their thing. Just tell them, just keep doing your thing. Because all I know is the shorting can only, if there's shorting going on, naked shorting and so on, it can only go on for so long, I think. I could be wrong, who knows? But as I said earlier, what are they going to do when it's 10 million, 20 million, 30 million, 50 million daily transactions from all kinds of stuff? Are we still at a fraction of the value we should be at? Maybe, but I know we can't control that part. We can control this. We can control Haste doing their thing, and Crypto Fights Fix Gaming doing their thing, and Brightview doing their thing, and Tonic Pow doing their thing, and Mint Blue and company, and on and on and on doing their thing that they can control by delivering, by really being really, really good at how they build their businesses. And I have to believe, as used to be the case in my prior life, the rest will take care of itself. Maybe it won't, but there's not much we can do about that, I think. And yeah, you can talk about the exchanges that delisted BSV. I understand where you're coming from. I was watching with shock and horror when that happened, because, you know, we all know these are not real exchanges, the way NASDAQ is an exchange. You can't imagine the Netflix CEO tweeting something bad about the NASDAQ CEO, and then NASDAQ saying, okay, Netflix, we're not, your stock is off our market. Like, you can't even imagine that in your mind. But of course, Kraken and Coinbase and so on, these are not real exchanges the way NASDAQ or the NYSE or the London Stock Exchange is. But still, we can't solve what they did there. Maybe someone's working on it, I don't know. But all we can solve is build your businesses as best you can, focus on what BSV does that no other blockchain can compete with. We all know that. And by the way, one point I wanted to make that I almost forgot: all the noise in crypto Twitter and BSV crypto Twitter that we all see, and maybe it grinds us down sometimes. And yeah, there's infighting, there's this and that. I got to tell you, most of the time, in my experience, most companies that I talk to, they don't know, they don't care. There are some that are more Twitter savvy than others because of maybe whatever the business they're in. But, you know, one reached out to me that I'm hoping we're going to invest in soon, the day of the 51% attack last summer. I forget the exact date. Yeah. But they had emailed me literally that day with their pitch from CoinGeek or Air Group or whatever. And we got to talking a few weeks later, finally. And they're like, yeah, you know, look, we're BSV fans. We currently use, you know, Ethereum or whatever for part of our business because it was ready first, in our opinions. But, you know, we follow BSV closely and we don't care about Craig this, you know, price that, lawsuits. It's just the best technology. And hopefully they're coming to BSV soon. Fingers crossed is what I meant to do. So
that's awesome, Paul. Always a pleasure, really. It's been good to catch up. I'm looking forward to seeing you in Dubai. I imagine you'll be there.
I sure hope so.
Just assuming the world doesn't collapse in the meantime.
Absolutely. I think that hopefully the world's done collapsing. But yeah, it's been a ton of fun. It's been my pleasure and honor to be on and chat with you. And everyone, please follow us at Air Group. Our social media team will kill me if I don't get that in. Anyone else, if anyone wants to follow up with me, I think my DMs are open. Even if you want to slander me, they're open for that too. No problem. We can chat about all of it.
Yeah. Sounds good. Paul, thanks so much. So everybody, that was Paul Rachkon. And I mean it when I say it. I've enjoyed my relationship with Paul thus far. We don't agree about everything. And I certainly share friendships with people that, you know, I get to be the bridge of peace and, you know, sometimes. But Paul's a good guy. He's a smart guy. He's a pleasant man to have a drink with and talk about business and all kinds of goodies. But I challenge you, excuse me, if you have a pitch, Paul's an easy guy to talk to. Even if it's no, it's usually a friendly no with a pat on the back and a bunch of good stuff. But I want everybody to know, I want you to wait. Don't disappear. We're actually going to debut a video here in the next minute or so. So if you're watching, if you've watched all of this, you're about to see the highlight video from CES 2022, where Alex Moon and I were in January. But before that, I want everybody to know too, let's double check here. 22. Okay, checking times and dates and stuff. We can win this, everybody. We have the technology. We have the people. Do we have the gumption? Do we have the patience? And do we have the drive? And if you have those things, a good VC might be the thing that gets you over the hump. So don't be afraid to reach out, but really put together a good pitch deck. Really try to forecast your stuff. This is good advice. And it's good advice I was happy to share here on the CoinGeek Weekly live stream. So I'm going to bow out here, but please continue watching because this highlight video is straight fire. It's more of me, so it's going to be fantastic. Everybody, I'm Kurt Wooker Jr. It's been a pleasure. I thank you, the viewers. And a reminder, as I go, per usual, be good to each other, everybody. Take care.
We are live at CES 2022. This is the BSV booth. We've got Bitcoin Association, BSV Blockchain, Omniscape, Built by Gamers, Haste Arcade, and a bunch of others. We're rocking and rolling. I'm on very little sleep, but I'm very excited for what's going on. Join me as we check out all the madness here. There's a ton of presenters, and we're looking forward to seeing who's here.
There's gamers, there's arcades, there's AR, VR. Everybody's got a metaverse over here. I feel like this has got to be like shooting fish in a barrel from a client acquisition standpoint for you guys.
Yeah, no, it's definitely been a lot of really great conversations, and we've got, made a lot of connections and business cards and all that. We'll do some follow up after CES, of course, to really dig deeper into those for sure. But yeah, it's also not just about gamers and metaverse, so that certainly is a primary audience for us. It's really just anyone who's interested in instant leaderboard payouts or ILP. That is the kind of the bread and butter of our technology, and so we've had a lot of really great conversations with folks who aren't into gaming. It might be like a bowling alley or a loyalty program or something like that. So it's been just really fun to talk to a lot of folks.
So it's funny, I initially thought of you as a gaming company, but this ILP thing, is this an active SDK? This is plug and play today?
Right, yeah. So for the actual Haste Arcade, which is, of course, what you're referring to, there is an active SDK. Any third-party game developer can go and create an ILP-enabled game. For ILP explicitly, we have not released that as a public SDK at this point. That is probably something we plan to do this year, though.
Can you guys hear me down there? Down in Miami?
Yeah.
Yes. Right. Hey, I'm looking for an Omni token. Do you guys mind dropping me one?
Of course, man. I can do that just for you.
Right now.
Hi, sweet. I see it. Thank you so much. All right, I got it.
Of course, of course.
All right, I appreciate it, y'all. I'm going to run around now. I'll see y'all later.
All right, we're trying to build something that's the metaverse for the real world. We believe that everything, whether it's data or AR or VR, if it's tied back to the real world and real world locations, that's where you get your utility, your value, your practicality, and your ability to actually change the world and change people's lives.
B- Maybe you can describe for our viewers what exactly is happening on screen.
So basically, as I mentioned, we have a partnership with Aerometrics, and we've been taking these huge city scale like 3D scans and taking it, working our magic in it, and then kind of getting it into a virtual, kind of a world platform. And we're going to be doing that for like a whole lot of cities, going in the future. So for everybody that's, buying virtual real estate in Decentraland or Sandbox, those are virtual worlds that are off to the side. We're building something that's like tied to the actual real world, kind of from the ground up, and then overlaying in all of the other cool stuff, whether it's avatars or this AR, VR blend where we can like literally, it's like you're teleporting to another location, another city to experience it. And like, oh my gosh, I've been here before. I used to visit there. I grew up there. And now I'm interacting with other people's avatars. And like, this is one of the things that makes us different as far as metaverse stuff goes. We're literally trying to build a metaverse for the real world that's going to have all kinds of amazing, potential, ways to interact and collaborate and do commerce and everything else. But it all starts with who you are, where you are, what is around you, and of course, our super sexy digital twins.
And they are super sexy. That's the other thing. You've got the machine here doing the 3D scan of people, and I got to be the super sexy digital twin myself, which was pretty exciting. What happens with those? How can people claim them? What's going on with that?
So for now, it's a little bit just kind of a showpiece to get attention, right? And so basically what we do is we get this really cool 3D, like 160, body scan of you, which we then we send off to the cloud, we do some processing, and it comes back rigged. And rigged means it's got some internal, like, invisible bones, so we can animate you and make you dance around and do silly things. And then we send you the 3D model, like, in your email, and you can kind of play with it in a little bit, a couple backgrounds. But at the same time, kind of what we're also building is the ability to kind of tokenize what you look like, so you have control over your own appearance, your own identity. And because it's full 3D and rigged, you can easily pop it in as your own avatar while you're walking around, doing fun stuff, which is kind of cool.
BSV has the highest transaction per second capability in the entire world. Right now, it's about 100,000 transactions per second capable. Frankly, we do not have any competitors. There's Solana blockchain, there's Avalanche, there's Polygon, there's people that are out here trying to solve some of these problems. But even with all the work they've put in, some of them with tens of millions of dollars worth of budgets and things to beat us, they come out and they're like, okay, we can do about 8,000 transactions per second. That's pretty good, right? It's like, well, we're 10 times better and we're deployed and it's done. You guys, I think, are probably the most misunderstood project in the BSV space. I think it is a fantastic project, but everybody likes to think about the worst case scenario and everything about people's data and data ownership. What do you say to the people that look at this as like nothing but a dystopian nightmare that you guys have created?
We actually love this question because it's a great opportunity for us to sort of set the record straight and set the record how it should have been set a long time ago, is that your personal medical information should be yours to own. And through VXPass, through a double digital signature, we never store your personally identifiable information on chain. At VXPass, we don't own the data. We can never give it away because we don't own it. Gun to my head, Kurt, I could not find your record if I wanted to. And I think that's really important for everyone to understand that digital sovereignty for your health records is important not only now for COVID, but in our long-term goal to bring digital health sovereignty to the 4.5 billion-ish people that do not have a clear medical history, that they don't own, they don't know where the records are kept, or maybe the records are just not there anymore.
Sean Ryan from Smart Ledger. How you doing, sir?
Doing well today, Kurt. Thank you for having me.
So a lot of people are talking in the blockchain space about how much energy we're wasting and then how bad mining is for the environment, blah, blah, blah. What do you have to say to those people?
Well, I think when they start digging into the different blockchain technologies out there, they're going to realize that when you start looking at the utility of the BSV blockchain, really offers, you know, a real sustainable blockchain because of the amount of data you're able to put on and the amount of utility that it offers to the enterprises out there that are looking to take advantage of this technology.
Like a little side thing, we got Ticket Mint here. Can you explain Ticket Mint real quick? Because I don't think people understand just how cool this idea is.
Yeah, so Ticket Mint is something we developed about a year ago. And Ticket Mint, what it does is it's a smart ticketing platform that utilizing NFT and the blockchain technology. And two of the major pain points that it helps with is it helps mitigate fraud and it almost completely eliminates third-party ticket gouging. And, you know, right now in the ticketing industry, those are some of the biggest major pain points that people are dealing with.
It's been a heck of a show. We're starting to wrap up a little bit here. What was your main goal coming to this convention?
Well, I mean, CES is always the epicenter of the new, the next, the what's coming. And we love that we can come here and be a part of this whole group with BSV and the BSV community who are so focused on the new, the next, the what's coming. So that's what we were excited about, is to meet great people, connect with people who need to know more about BSV and more about Built by Gamers, and tell our story about what we're committed to over the next year plus. It is so fun to see people's eyes and minds open up when they understand the power of BSV. And this next year will, I think this is the year where a whole lot of users are going to figure this out and say, man, I want to be inside this ecosystem, not just because they care about the ecosystem itself, but because they care about what they can do inside here. So we're thrilled. So much more to come. Keep an eye out. BSV!
CES 2022 was crazy. I'm all packed up, getting ready to head back to the airport. Flights have been canceled everywhere. There's storms in the Northeast. COVID's got TSA stretched extra thin. And I am trying like hell to get home from Miami, go see my family. Fingers crossed that we make it. It's been a blast. It's been a pleasure working with everybody. I'm really excited to see CES 2023. But until then, go home. Enjoy a little bit of pleasant Miami weather in January. I'm Kurt Wilker Jr. Take care.